What's my name?
Mr.
What's my name?
Mr.
What's my name?
Kids are learning. They're learning either way. And I think at the start of the pandemic, a lot of parents were worried about kids falling back. Kids are learning in everyday experiences. Either they're counting the stairs going up, or if they're balancing on the side of the road, or they're doing something, they're learning regardless.
Yeah.
So I think it's just about that connection.
If you want to get access to coaching with me and ask your own questions on this podcast, sign up to my Patreon. Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching podcast, where I introduce you to the people who can help you on your leadership, parenting, or teaching journey. Today, I have Mother Could from Instagram.
Hi, everyone.
She's here with us today. And, you know, we're going to talk a lot about sensory and sensory play and the benefits to sensory. But first, let me allow her to introduce herself. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you so much for having me on, by the way. I have been looking forward to this because your infectious personality is just amazing. So I'm very excited to be here. I also have a lot of energy, so you'll see me through the roof the entire time.
Cool. We'll lie.
Well, I'm Miriam Sandler, and I'm the creator of Mother Could. And it's basically, I would call it kind of like a blogger, but only social media, because I hate writing. And so I did not really create a blog per se. So I'm a video creator. I love creating videos and tutorials for kids' activities. I started doing sensory recipes to kind of mimic those BuzzFeed recipes for food. And I was like, this doesn't exist yet for play. So let's start that. And that's kind of like where I started everything. And it just blew up of videos of play. So here we are.
Wow. And so tell me, I love that you said that this doesn't exist for play.
Yes.
And that just, I think even just the word play just always kind of like strikes a chord in my heart. So, but you know, what are the benefits of sensory play? Let's kind of jump into the benefit before we get into more detail.
So in terms of benefits for me, it's connecting with my children. That to me is like the number one reason that I do sensory play, because the connection that you get while trying to make a recipe and then actually like all encompassing multiple senses into playing and just being brings everybody back to when they were 3 years old and just being together. So for me, that's the biggest benefit. But there's tons of things. Like I said, you are using multiple senses in one area. So you're not just focusing on your math skills. You're not just focusing on reading. You're not just focusing on this or that. You're focusing on what does it smell like? What does it taste like most of the time? And what does it feel like? And then trying to make different sensory bases to feel different textures. So for me, the reason I started this actually was because when I was a new mom, my daughter did not want to eat. And I wanted to, you know, it was very hard. Yeah. It was very hard because you're like, I'm a new mom and my child is not eating. And even though the doctor said she was doing great, I was like, but she's not eating.
Yeah.
So from my background, I was like, I'm going to dive deep into sensory play and see if it helps. It made an immediate difference. So we a lot of time focus on putting on the pretty bibs and making sure that you feed them straight into their mouth and everything is like super clean. So there's not a lot to clean up, but the messier, the better. I learned that.
Yeah.
And sensory play completely changed everything. My daughter nowadays, she's 6. We started when she was 1 and she loves all textures. She will jump in a pool of mud if she wanted, if she could. But that's only because of the exposure to textures. I could tell right away from when she was a baby, even when she was sitting on grass, she would cry, or she would put her feet on the sand and she would cry. And that's all due to texture sensitivities. So sensory play saved us pretty much.
Can you talk just a little bit more about the connection between sensory play and her, you know, eating and the foods that she didn't want to eat? Because a lot of people out there listening, like, okay, well, I don't really see how that connects with you, make, you know, kinetic sand and Play-Doh and mud.
Totally. With,
you know, her eating food. So talk to us a little more.
So I noticed that she would only like stuff that was very liquidy because the texture that she was most comfortable with was milk, breast milk. So everything that was very grinded down and didn't have any sort of texture, liquid, she was very comfortable with. But anything that had any sort of texture, let's say rice, let's say adding a little bit of rice cereal to the milk, adding meat to her soup, and then the different textures, like carrot has a very distinct texture versus avocado has a very distinct texture. All of these things were so new to her that she was just like taken aback and just didn't want to taste it at all. It would go into her mouth and she would automatically like go and just try, which sometimes is very normal for babies to do that. But over time, they say you should have at least 3 exposures before they actually like it. So over time, I would expose to the different textures and food going into her mouth, and it wasn't working. So I was like, I'm going to now take it into her entire being. I'm going to replicate rice, into touching the rice, into smelling the rice, into fully taking her on to the rice journey.
Yeah.
So I started creating rice sensory bins, and now she knew exactly what it felt like and what it would taste like and what it would smell like. And I did that for every single texture until she was comfortable with. So that's why I got into the kitchen and I created Taste Safe Play-Doh. I created Taste Safe sand. I created Taste Safe beach sand. So when she went to the beach, she would feel the texture and she'd be like, oh, this is what I'm comfortable with. I've played with it already. It's my friend.
Yeah.
And that's what I did with every single texture that she was uncomfortable with, which was all of them, unfortunately, except for milk.
Yeah.
So it took not that long. You'd think that it would be like a long time, but it was about 6 months of like going from nothing to actually seeing a lot of progress. And then to today, to no texture sensitivities at all. Come my second daughter, I started from the get-go.
How old was your first daughter when you started? You said 6 months and you told.
So she was right about, it was exactly around 12 months that I was like, okay, now she's reached a year and she's still not eating anything. I need to do something. Yeah. So it was like from 12 months to 18 months that it was like intense. And then it was like, okay, we got somewhere. But with my youngest daughter, I started sensory play when she was 6 months old. As soon as she could splash water, sit up, and just hold herself in a position, I would expose her to dyed spaghetti, which is completely taste safe. I would make a lot of Jell-O play, but without sugar, so it's not sticky. Taste safe Play-Doh, all of these, the majority of my recipes are taste safe, because even my daughters now that are 6 and 3, they still taste everything. So
yeah, they're gonna be adventurous eaters.
And, oh my god, you know, I hope so.
You know, and I just want to highlight that, you know, that connection, and just because children really, when they're first, I think about it this way: children come to this world, they do have these, you know, set of tools that they don't know how to use, that they just come with, and it's called their 5 senses. And they, you know, that's how they process information. That is how they receive information. But, you know, sometimes it's, you know, they haven't had the, when they haven't had the experience with a certain texture or a certain food, it's a completely new experience. So that's almost, it doesn't feel completely safe unless they've kind of had the practice and they've been familiar with that thing. And so that just helps. And that helps in so many other areas of just brain development, because they are constantly used, because those are their tools. You know, those are the main things that they're, you know, they're using their sight, they're using their touch, they're using their taste, they're using their smell for everything, right? They're using their hearing for everything. So, but it's great that you've brought so many things very intentionally in creating these experiences for, well, now all your children. I know I saw that you have a third one on the way. Yay.
Thank you.
Congrats. But so anyone who's out there, I think this would be a pretty good time. I would actually be interested to, if you could share a little bit of, at least just this one recipe right now, just share one recipe and let's talk about it. And let's talk about the process of it. Talk about like when you're making it with your children, what does that look like?
Yeah. Okay. So my all-time favorite is Taste Safe Play-Doh because it lasts a long time. So you make it one time and it really lasts a long time. And usually when you play with Play-Doh in general, like store-bought, you're just like, it's store-bought. It doesn't matter if the cap's not on. But with homemade Play-Doh, you store it nicely, you wrap it. You made this, you know? So that's why I have my nice plastic on my Play-Doh.
And the children will too. Like in my experience, the children will take so much more care of the Play-Doh and the process of keeping it safe because they had a part in
100%. Creating it. 100%. So the reason that I like it, like I said, is that it's very easy to make. It comes together really quickly. It's kind of like fail-proof. It's super soft. It acts exactly like regular Play-Doh. It smells homemade, but it doesn't smell bad. You can add essential oils. You can manipulate it in a thousand million ways. But the process is my favorite part. So a lot of people say, I made this for my kids and they only played with it for 10 minutes and I felt like I prepared it for so much longer and then the cleanup was so much longer. So really what was it? And I was like, part of these activities is making it and cleaning up. It's all part of the activity. Mm-hmm. So get in your kitchen. There's so much learning that happens in the kitchen between measuring and pouring and mixing and kind of smelling the different textures and feeling the danger of boiling water that goes into the recipe and putting in those colors and mixing in yellow and blue to make green. And there's just so much that happens in the kitchen. You could do it on your table. You could do it anywhere. Yeah. But I think it's so important. I've involved my kids in making these recipes since they were a year and a half because it's so important to me. So part of these activities of making the sensory recipes is, I would say, maybe the most important part. And then you made it, and then you have this, and you have it to play. So you give it to them, you give them some cookie cutters, and you give them a few stampers, and you could do tons of things, and then they have their 20 minutes of play. So you spend 20 minutes making it, you spent 20 to 30 minutes playing, and then you clean up together, because it's part of the process. Give a kid the spray bottle to clean up, they're gonna like it, like they like it.
Yeah, especially those younger ages of, you know, five and younger. I think this, like, really, I always talk about, and I, you know, used to teach Montessori threes to fives, and at three, you would really see, and you see it at two as well, but three is that age where children can do pretty much all the things that adults can do in terms of, like, their like physical ability to do things. I mean, it may need to learn the process of things. They may need, you know, like a child-sized broom, but they're actually able to start sweeping at three. And they really
want to.
Yes. So, and even if you're like, whether you're getting like a little hand broom or, you know, something like that, you just kind of give them, and maybe you're making the spray bottles and stuff ahead of time so that, you know, when it's time to clean up, it's a little bit
seamless.
You can be fully involved in the process. But let me ask you a question. So has there ever been a time where you like had this idea, like, okay, and even like you're process orientated, but where maybe it just went a completely different way that you weren't expecting? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, actually, I brought my Taste Safe Kinetic Sand, that's exactly how it happened. We live in South Florida. We are never going to see snow. It's never going to happen. So I was like, I want to make some Taste Safe snow for my kids because they have that instant snow that you just add water to it. But my kids eat everything. They will eat it. So I was like, I'm going to make some Taste Safe snow. So I'm in the kitchen and I'm like, what are some properties of snow that will be great, but won't stick will clump up together to make a snowman and will last a really long time. So I used baking soda because baking soda, I think, will last a lifetime. I use baking soda, I use cornstarch, I put in some sugar because it also adds that shine that snow has. And then I added a little bit of water to it. And it made it look exactly like snow. But the more I played with it and the more I added a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that, a little bit less water, it became kinetic sand. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, this is really cool to have taste-safe kinetic sand. And none of those recipes ever existed. Anytime I ever tried to make kinetic sand recipe from online, none of them were taste-safe. None of them worked. Even with the dish soap and the sand and all this, I was very frustrated in making kinetic sand. So miraculously, experimenting in the kitchen, we made taste-safe kinetic sand. And it lasts forever. This sand has been... it's a store in the refrigerator, but this sand has been in my refrigerator for, I would say, about a year or so.
Wow.
It looks exactly like sand. I don't know if you could see that there.
Wow.
Let's go like this. So it looks exactly like sand, and it also clumps up to be like kinetic sand. So obviously it's not exactly like it because it's made using food ingredients. The fact that it lasts so long and that kids can play with it I mean, you and I know that it's not kinetic sand, but my 3 and 6 year old are like, this is the best kinetic sand ever. So
yeah. What kind of things? So on the side, one of the members asked, what kind of things do you play with kinetic sand? So how do you play with it?
Okay. So anything that is like loose parts, like rice, dyed beans, sand, like dry loose parts, basically, I always add little bowls and little scoops, because kids forever can just scoop and pour. Scoop and pour.
And what a great skill that they're learning, especially at that, you know, 2, 3, 4 year old age.
Yeah. And I also like to theme them. I like to make it fun. So if my daughter is into LOL dolls at that moment, I'll put her little LOL dolls in there for her to play with them. If I want to do an under the sea, I'll do little fish. So I have all these like little toys that my kids already play with. I'll just bring them in to create a little world of play within the bins.
So what containers do you use for these different sensory activities? Because I know you don't just keep them all in the bag. And so I would like for you to share as many as you can think of off the top of your head of just different containers that, you know, teachers, parents can use. And obviously,
What I tell people all the time is most people have an aluminum foil pan.
Yep.
Most people have this. That is the perfect sensory bin. You don't need to go out and buy anything. There are so many options. You could use those like drawers from IKEA that make great sensory bins. You could use serving trays. Actually, my favorite sensory bins are a 3-pack from Amazon, and they're meant to serve cheese. I think they're wonderful. I think they're great.
Yeah.
I have a reel that I created for Instagram, and it's about how to use things that you already have in your house for sensory play. So aluminum trays, you know, the droppers. All families mostly have those like nasal suctions for when babies are born.
Uh-huh.
Those are perfect droppers because they're actually big bulbs and they're perfect for little hands. Mm-hmm. You could use tongs from the kitchen. Perfect. So many ideas. So just use what you have. Don't need to buy anything. The only thing I suggest is good food coloring. The rest you have.
And like, that's what children love the most. They love the real things that they see you use. Another thing that I really love, one of my favorite things to like just add, and I know it's always going to be a hit if I add it to the, you know, water sensory table, if I put like a strainer in there.
Immediate.
They'll like lift it up. It'll do great all day. They'll try to drip it in the cups.
Yes.
And that's such a great, I mean, anything, a ladle. And another thing too about water sensory is that it's also very calming for children. And so like that would be something that I would be very intentional about, especially if I knew that like all right, like there's, you know, there's a particular child in my classroom who needs, you know, an area for them, maybe sometimes throughout the day they get dysregulated, like, and to help them just kind of go back to a state of regulation, like the water sensory would be something that I would suggest that they would love to do. And it just, you can just see how their body starts to relax. And I get it too, because I mean, like, have you ever, like,
to us too,
right?
100%. 100%.
Yeah, love playing in water.
So my background is in psychology. I have a bachelor's in psychology. And while I was in school, I worked for the Center for Children and Families, which focuses on kids that have ADD and ADHD. And the program was very behavioral focused and intense. And basically by the end of the program, what we did was give you the perfect behavioral formula to how to help your child. And we used a lot of sensory play in it.
Yeah.
We used a lot of sensory play, and water was one of the big ones, because the sound, the way it feels, the way you can incorporate it, the way you can change the colors to change your mood. We use water a lot.
That's also something that I would suggest for, you know, parents who want to encourage independent play. Yeah. You know, it's those open-ended kind of activities with, you know, sensory, like children, again, they will like do things, they will pour for hours, for days. And like, that's one of the things too. So as a Montessori, like one of my goals is like, I want them to be able to do these practical life skills where they're pouring a whole pitcher into their, you know, small cup. Like at, you know, when they come in my classroom at three or an older two, they're definitely not able to do that. And so like, how can I practice this with them, or have them practice this skill without, you know, without me having to sit with them like, oh, this is the thing? Because when you try to do it in that way, when you, you know, create pressure around it and like, okay, now this is an activity that we're going to do. And, you know, it's maybe depending on what it is, if they're really curious about it, they'll be with it for a while. But if you just teach them, if you just create the environment, and this is probably one of the big lessons of Montessori, if you just create the environment that is conducive for learning, then one, it takes a lot of the work out of you. I just have to set it up and then trust the child will go to it when they're interested in it. And I can be very intentional about what I put in it. Maybe I do really want, you know, it's the child who's really into cars and trucks, and I really want, you know, her or him to practice pouring. So maybe I will put some cars and trucks in there, but I'll also put some, you know, some pitchers and different size cups and some ladles. And then they're practicing pouring all day for you know, maybe hours without me having to do anything. And then they're also with the spoon. And, you know, you mentioned the dry sensory with the rice and, you know, dry beans and all that stuff. And, you know, using some of those same materials, you know, they're working on those fine motor skills.
It's learning through play, the best type of learning.
100%. You know, and then, you know, the things that we're worried about is like, oh, are they going to be able to like write their name? And, you know, those are the things that they need to do to get ready for that skill.
100%. Playing with Play-Doh is actually really important for hand development. It strengthens those muscles that you need to hold a pencil to later learn how to write.
Yep.
And I think it's so important. So important.
And you think about like when you add the tools to it too, the manipulating those tools, you know, not just with that, with lacing too. When I know kids don't tie their shoes anymore, they just like pull them, but all the skills, right?
Yes. I think one of the concerns that a lot of parents have is, I gave my child a sensory bin and they played with it for 2 minutes. And that's it's common, because it's kind of like learning a new skill. It's like I hand you raw meat and I'm like, have fun, do something with it. And you're like, put it back, right?
Yeah.
You just don't know what to do. So sensory and independent play in general is a skill that you learn over time. So exposure to the textures is one thing. And then it's also, what do I do with this? Eventually they get it after you keep going and keep going and give it to them again, give it to them again. And then they learn what to do with it. And then it's just like the best thing ever. But yeah, it does, it's a skill that takes time to learn for sure.
Let me ask you this. Do you have any boundaries that you create around the sensory play? And like, what are those and how do you communicate those? Because I know in the classroom, I was pretty, I had a whole process that I like went through.
I'd love to hear that.
I want to hear what yours is first.
Okay. So it depends on their age, right? As they get older, my six-year-old doesn't need me to repeat the boundaries as much because I've been telling her for 5 years the boundaries, right? So it starts with an area, and the younger that they are, I create a physical boundary. So I'll create a physical boundary, and they could see it. They can see, this is where I need to keep my sensory items. So if it's a rice bin, I'm not going crazy throwing the rice everywhere, right? I'm keeping it in this area. It doesn't mean just inside the bin. I'm creating, like, I'll grab blue painter's tape. I'll grab blue painter's tape and like physically put a boundary around my two-year-old. And she'll say in her mind, I can keep it here. Or you can grab a fitted sheet, put it under, and then put four chairs, and they're basically in like a little swimming pool, and this is where I have to keep it. So a physical, visible boundary for kids that are under, I would say four, under four would be very smart. And then this is where you decide, am I going to let them try to eat it, or am I not going to let them try to eat it? So my recipes are taste safe, but I still want to discourage them not to eat it, right? Because eventually they're not going to eat Play-Doh for breakfast. So a little taste here and there is fine. Like they're licking their hands. But if I tell them, do not put big chunks in your mouth. Do not put big chunks in your mouth. Do not put that in your mouth. And I'll like physically move their hand away so that they repeatedly see the motion happening. Eventually it doesn't happen anymore. Those are my two. That's it.
I love the fitted sheet too, because it's tall. It's I love it. I love the idea. So this is what I would do. And so keep in mind, I know, like, so as a teacher of, you know, when I was really doing the water sensory, because when I was an assistant teacher, I didn't really have, or at least didn't feel like I had control over the room. You know, the water table wasn't something that was available all the time. It was only like a special kind of thing. But I decided that when I took, like, when I had my own class, that the water table would be available pretty throughout the day, maybe except for like lunch and nap time, but otherwise open throughout the day. And honestly, that was, you know, teachers out there listening who are like concerned, like, oh, I don't do sensory because I'm afraid of the mess. Like, life is so much better with the sensory and then just teaching them how to use it. So this would be the process that I would go through. And especially in the beginning of the year, and I know that they would make mistakes. And I, in my mind, know that, like, that's going to happen. That's a part of the process. I'm expecting it. And I'm okay with that. And I'm going to respond with empathy. But when I let them know, it's okay, so here is the water table. I would limit it to the amount of people there. They can play in other areas. When they see that someone else is, well, when it's open, I'd limit it to four people. And the way I would explain it, one person on each side. So like that's a physical thing that they can see. I love what you said about the physical like barrier. Sometimes I would put like towels underneath it, but my thing was keep it inside of the sensory table. And I kind of heard you use that language too, that positive language of just like keep it inside the table. And that was most of my focus. Yeah. So really it would be four people in the sensory table. Keep everything inside the table, which includes, you know, not putting it in your mouth, keeping it inside the table. Right. And then it would be, if you make a mess, just, you know, clean it up. And I would have paper towels there or just an actual towel there so that they could clean it up. And I kind of played this game, especially beginning of the year. I would be like a little bit more like, kind of like, you know, maybe like a little bit more like strict, have a stricter boundary. And then I loosened up and just trusted them. But like, hey, yeah. I'm establishing this boundary in the beginning so that I can allow you to, and even later, as I know that they can interact, they understand the boundary, even if they like cross it, the boundary, I'm still usually like, I'm still observing, and it's not a clear cut. Just because they broke the rule doesn't mean like I'm going to, you know, send them away from the table and have them stop doing it. Because I want them to be able to experiment and try different things. Yeah.
And it's okay to mess up, and you come try again, and it's part of it. And I think that's also part of the sensory play of learning. Like, yeah, I broke the rule and these are the consequences, and then I'm going to come back tomorrow and this is it. Because I think following through with what the boundaries are and actually doing something is what teaches them about the boundary more than you telling them over and over again. Following through with the consequences is what makes the biggest difference, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree. So this is what I would say. So I'm kind of doing all this explanation for the adults, but when I'd communicate to the children, I would say there are four people allowed in the water table. Let's count. 1, 2, 3, 4. How many people? And have to repeat. 4 people. All right. And all the water stays inside the water table. And then it's in the very beginning, I'm just saying the guidelines, and usually I try to keep it at just 3, no more than 4. I'm just saying it and then having them repeat it. Now, we've done it and you guys kind of know it already, already know what the boundaries are, but you just need to be reminded, and I'm reminding you because we're opening it up for the day, I would start the sentence and have them finish it. And for me, that's just like the verbal contract of like, all right, we're all clear on what the boundaries are today.
That's right.
Because you know, honestly, sometimes they're, you know, it's generally the sensory stuff stays inside the sensory table, but even sometimes I would break the boundaries and I would say that, like, you know, today I'm going to allow, you know, and I got this huge pumpkin because it's in the fall, and I'm going to allow it in the writing table because we're going to put golf pegs here and we're going to use this little hammer, and you can hammer in the golf pegs. So now the sensory actually is in a different area. You're not keeping inside the table. So, you know, sometimes, and
changes.
And so like, I actually loved kind of breaking, like allowing them to like, hey, we're actually, you know that rule that I said?
Yeah.
We're actually going to break it today.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. And they'd be like, super excited.
We do the same thing at home. Well, those are some rules for the inside, but then sometimes we're like, but let's go outside. There's no rules.
Yeah, right.
And that's kind of how you play with it.
Yeah. And another thing that I would do in terms of like, and honestly, I wouldn't even do, there'd be certain days I'd focus on, you know, different boundaries. So like, you make a mess, you clean it up. Right. One, I'm going to be intentional about making it easy for them to do that. I'm not going to have the paper towels or whatever all the way across the room. It's going to be right there visible for them. So when they make the mess, it's easy. It's right there. It's a visual reminder. They can just go ahead and clean it up. And I'd kind of play a game. Okay. Like, I'm really going to be watching today. Like, today we're really practicing cleaning up our mess if we make a mess. It's okay. Mistakes are going to happen. Because even when you're, especially playing with water, you're just having fun. Even myself, like, I'll make a mess.
Yes.
Right? And so, and I would do that too in front of them and just show them and model cleaning up. Another pro tip. But then I would kind of walk around like, I'm looking. And I'd give them a very specific, like, almost control of air. Like, if I'm walking by the water table and I'm seeing a puddle by your feet and I can kind of splash it, then that's too much water. And we have to clean up. And at first it'd be me reminding them. And then like over time, because I have, you know, multiple years with them. And so like, I'm not looking to, you know, for them to do perfect with the boundaries on the first day. I'm really looking over a long period of time of maybe focusing on different parts and like, okay, you guys have gotten better at keeping it inside. But now let's get better at, you know, cleaning it up. Now let's get better at, and so like certain days I'd focus on certain things. Yeah. And yeah, there would be times where a child would, you know, they get, you know, I would repeat, I'm like, hey, look, remember, we have to keep it inside. And they would take the cup and they would like pour it on the floor. I'm like, okay, let's clean it up. Okay. Now, all right, that was a fun experiment.
Right. Yeah.
You know, we don't want anyone.
Boundary, to, that's but, exactly right.
Right. Yeah. It was, yeah, we crossed the boundary. Yep. Now we're cleaning up. Like, yep. This is the process, right? Yeah. And I'll also remind them why, too, because we don't want people to slip. Yeah. All the children, and children do end up have these bursts of energy and run. And so, like,
that's right.
All right, let's clean it up. And there'd be some times where they would cross the boundary, and then, you know, they wouldn't want to clean it up. I'm like, okay, well, remember what I said, you know, in the beginning, like, I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
Yeah.
Right. Remember? Yeah. Very empathetic.
Yep.
And they're like, yeah, okay. Still pretty disappointed.
Yeah.
And they leave.
They get it.
Right.
They
Let's try again later. Right. I want you to come back later.
Yep.
And we'll try again. No big deal. I'm not going to stress over the fact that, like, yeah, I'm going to clean it up for them. That's something that I'm going to work on maybe another day.
Yeah.
And they know, and 9.99 times out of 10, one, all the other children are watching, because you can, like, they're all wide-eyed, like,
yeah, what's going to happen?
What's gonna happen? I'm like, they cross the boundary. That's exactly what the teacher said not to do. And he told us exactly what was going to happen. Like, is he going to follow through? Is he going to yell at, like, yes. I can see all these questions happening.
Yes.
And like, the answer is, I'm going to respond empathetically.
That's right.
And I am going to lovingly enforce the boundary. And then we're going to practice and let you know, we're going to practice later.
And the best thing is, they come back tomorrow, not different person, but like better. They understand it. And now they're telling the other kids the boundary.
Yeah, right. We have to keep it inside.
Yes.
Right. Or when they spill it, they're going to be more inclined to clean it up. Like, oh, yeah, I want to clean it up because I want to stay here.
Okay.
And so, so if you're doing, you know, if you're introducing sensory play, this is something new to you. You've done it kind of like a little bit, like, and maybe you did it once. You did it one time and it scarred you for life. Like,
which happens a lot because they have that first experience where mom doesn't know what to do and kid doesn't know what to do. And then it's just like a sprinkle rice everywhere party. And it's like, well, I'm never doing that again. That was terrible. And it was like, yeah, but once you get like all the pieces going together, it's magic.
Yeah. And letting them know like what part they're going to play in it too. And really thinking intentionally about like where they're at in their development. Right. You know, I'm not going to let the toddler stir the boiling water.
That's right.
But, you know, I will let the toddler stir the
dry ingredients,
you know, the mix when it's being mixed.
That's right.
Or the rice or whatever it is. And even as they get a little older, right, as they're 3 or 4, that boiling water, that's an opportunity. Like, I'm, you know, will and have with like boiling stuff.
Yeah.
Will allow them, like, okay, like, this is really hot. This is really hot, but I'm going to show you, like, this is really hot. And even allow them to put their hand around it to where they can feel the heat. And they're like, ooh, hot, hot, right? And it's, and you can see how much more impactful it is. Because look, they're, again, using their senses, not just hearing you and saying, oh, it's hot, but really engaging, feeling the heat and connecting it to the word. And like, ooh, yeah, that is hot.
That's right.
Careful. All right, I got you.
Okay. And when they finally get to pour that boiling water, it's like, did you see that? Did you see that? I got to pour the boiling water. It's like a proud, a proud moment. It's been all this time of, I cannot pour the boiling water. But now I could see it in my daughter's eyes. Like every time the first time I handed them a glue bottle, they were like, she's giving me the glue bottle? Like, I can go? And they were like, really? And I was like, yeah, go for it.
And a lot of times, like, it's, you know, enjoying what I really love. Like, I would say that I was terrible with getting a quote unquote good product when I would do these sensory activities. It wouldn't be like the nice consistency that I like had envisioned or I saw other teachers make. Like, that was not my skill. And whenever I would, like, I would, you know, in terms of like when you're gonna ask, like, oh, so who do you want like for an assistant? You know, I'd be like, I would always ask for the people who were like, who loved doing the things that I just wasn't my skill. Yeah. But with that, I think that almost became my strength, yeah, because it allowed me to kind of let go of the end product and just like, oh, this is a little bit, oh, it's a little bit too sticky. You think, what do you think we should add? More like, you know, flour or more cornstarch or more water? And I'd genuinely be asking them, yeah, because I'm like, I'm just as clueless as you guys. Like, we're on this experiment through going through this process of just figuring it out.
I love it.
Because like whatever product we came out with,
yes,
and like, you know, it was what it was. And
that's part of them. It. I think that's one of my favorite parts about sensory play. And also one of the reasons I started creating videos versus blogging, because I felt like if you could see it happening, you could understand how it processes a little bit better. And that's why I started with making play recipes, like food recipes. Like, first you add your flour, then you add your salt, then you add it all together, and then you mix it, and then you have your Play-Doh.
Yeah.
But seeing it makes such a big difference in sensory play making. I personally, not a fan of Pinterest. I don't go on Pinterest at all. Because everything that I've tried on Pinterest, nothing works. And I'm crafty, okay? I am crafty. I have all of the things, okay?
Yeah.
I've tried it and nothing works. I'm like, I don't understand how these things are popular. It blew my mind. Pinterest blew my mind. So I'm just like, Pinterest's not my friend.
Yeah. I think that's like a metaphor for Pinterest. Like, these, right? Pinterest perfect things that,
yeah,
don't actually function, but they don't look nice. Yeah.
They look great. And you're, yeah, like, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah.
And then you just wasted like 75 pounds of sand trying to make kinetic sand. I cannot tell you how many kinetic sand recipes I tried off of Pinterest.
Yeah.
Not one. Yeah. Not one. Not one.
Like, that should be comforting, considering I feel like you're like the guru on Instagram with these sensory play recipes.
I take it very seriously. Like,
what'd you say?
I take it very seriously.
Yeah. And, you know, and so that should be really comforting for anyone out there who is just trying to get into it. You're not the guru, but you're just trying it out. And, you know, to be accepting of the, you know, imperfections, yeah, of the process. And I think that's a big theme in the podcast and a lot of what I talk about. I feel like my big tagline is, you know, don't be a perfectionist, be an improvist. The goal isn't to be perfect every day. The goal is to improve a little every day. And that is, you know, the process even of creating, you know, these recipes. Yeah. And that's also sounds like your process. And I think,
yeah,
even, you know, in terms of like even talking more about benefits of just, you know, you think about the skills that your child is learning during that time of observing, feeling,
yeah,
testing, like truly being, thinking like a scientist, like, okay, I have this hypothesis, I'm going to test it. Let me see. It didn't work out. Okay. Now I can improve it a little bit more, get a little bit better and better and figure it out. She says, Katie asks, do you have Instagram or YouTube of sensory ideas? Pinterest, yes, is awful with ads and blogs and such. So yes, go to her Instagram. I'm going to put it in the comments.
If you go to my Instagram and you click the link in my bio, it'll take you to my blog. But on that list of links, there's one link specifically, and it's called Sensory Play Recipes. And it's a free printable of 30 recipes. You don't even have to do anything. You just click on it and it'll take you to 30 free printable play recipes. And it's, like I said, true and tested, and you just print them out. It's totally free and you can find them all there. My Instagram at this point is a bit overloaded. So I found a way to create that 30 free printables that people can just print at home and have them. And then it's also easier to see when you're in person. So you can find all the sensory play recipes there.
Great. Thanks for the tip. Free printables.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to end it and I'm going to ask just kind of a general question. What do you think, What are the big things, I guess, to wrap it up, of like, what do you think are the biggest things that parents should keep in mind and teachers should keep in mind as they're maybe embarking on trying out some of these new sensory activities and kind of where they want to embark on this journey? Or maybe they have a child with, you know, sensory sensitivity challenges. What's, give us some like,
I think kind of like I said at the beginning, it's about connection, and that is all that matters. It doesn't matter what your end product, if your Play-Doh turned out like Play-Doh soup, it doesn't matter. The process of you sitting there with your child, pouring, measuring, putting it together, being at each other's level is so much more important than actually making Play-Doh. So connection, I would say, is the number one thing. Forget about the process, forget about the perfect recipe, forget about it having the perfect food coloring to make it vibrant. Forget about all the money that you need to spend, because you don't need to spend any money to make sensory. You probably have it all at home. Check out that reel, like I mentioned. The connection is so important, and it's going to happen through that process. So if you're thinking about trying out sensory play recipes, go for it, because if anything, you're going to connect with your children. And what's more important than that? I don't know anything.
Yeah.
I think that's the number one thing that I think. And that all goes with, it's not about perfection, and it's just about the process and about doing it and actually going for it. And you're just playing at the end of the day. I feel like a 5-year-old every single day. I'm over here trying out new things and experimenting and seeing what's happening. And why is it not going right? And why is it going yes? And what can I do? One of my other passions is creating with recycled items. Save it all. Save all the paper rolls. I save all the plastic containers, because I love using everything that I have. And that goes back to not spending any money. I have the money to spend it, but I don't want to. I want to create it myself. So I save all of the things, and I make it. And it's really satisfying to do that. And it's part of why I love to do it as a parent.
Yeah, man, I couldn't have said it any better myself, so I won't even say anything else. I love that. Thanks for coming on, Miriam.
Thank you.
I'm excited to have you. Thank you for sharing all of your knowledge, connection, that relationship. Guys, I will highlight what you said, though. The relationship is what matters. Think about like...
Kids are learning. They're learning either way. And I think at the start of the pandemic, a lot of parents are worried about kids falling back. Kids are learning in everyday experiences. Either they're counting the stairs going up, or if they're balancing on the side of the road, or if they're doing something, they're learning regardless.
Yeah.
So I think it's just about that connection, and they're learning.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. And we are too.
That's right. So,
all right. Well, I'm going to stop the broadcast right there.
Thank you.
What's my name? What's my name?